Alrighty, everybody. I hope you are all doing well. Today I want to hop on where we left off in our last episode. And that was by discussing the eschaton, the end times, and specifically what will happen to our bodies during the eschaton at the end times. What will happen to our bodies? And then also, like, how do we look at what happens to those saints and Jesus who have been basically assumed into heaven, as far as we can tell? How do we see that from a philosophical perspective that makes coherent sense? And we got started on this question last time because I used the Assumption of Mary as an example during our last episode of a way that we can kind of use a deductive argument to come to interesting conclusions about our faith. So, if you want to go back and listen to that episode, if you haven't already, I would suggest that. So, we were discussing the Assumption of Mary, and I brought up how most theologians today will say that the bodies of Mary and Jesus, and thus their whole persons, they're not in... they're not in heaven, per se, at least how I usually use the word heaven. When I usually use the word heaven, I think of that interim state where the soul is separate from the body before the general resurrection, at the second coming of Christ, at the end of time, before the new heavens and the new earth are created. So I'm thinking of that time between our deaths and the general resurrection, okay? That's what I usually mean by heaven. Now, I know some people will use that word and they will mean both the interim state and the new heavens and the new earth. So they basically mean anything after our deaths. But for the purposes of this podcast, when I say heaven, I'm going to mean that interim state. And so most theologians will say that the bodies of Jesus and Mary, and then, you know, subsequently their whole persons, are not in the interim state, because something bodily could not be there. That's purely for the disembodied spirits of human beings, and then also angels, to a certain extent, although I'm sure you could make some distinctions, definitely, between the state of an angel and the state of a disembodied human soul, right? And I was actually just reading a little bit the other day where Blessed John Duns Scotus talks about this in his second Ordinatio. I haven't gotten far enough to really expound on it, but it's interesting that he does discuss these sorts of distinctions. But Okay, so let's go back real quick and just think about, why are we even asking this question? Why does this question matter about where is the locality of the souls of Jesus and Mary, and also maybe other Old Testament figures, at least like Enoch and Elijah, whom it seems were assumed into heaven in some sort of a way? Why is this question important? And I would say, you know, it's not just for the sake of fun theological speculation. I think it is fun. It's fun to think about these things. But it's also so that we can make a coherent view about these sorts of issues. So what happens in Christianity a lot is we will have, you know, revelation revealed to us, certain aspects of revelation revealed to us in various ways, and we then have to figure out, how do we piece these things together to make a coherent whole? You know, this happens with everything. In science, in the scientific community, using the word science in like the modern use, in the scientific community, you know, they will receive evidence of things that they don't necessarily know how to fit into the prior evidence, right? And so they have to come up with theories to make everything fit together again. You know, you can think of when Isaac Newton discovered the laws of gravity, or at least, you know, wrote them down more coherently than we could have used before. You can also think of then the subsequent revolution of Einstein with quantum physics, how that has changed and continues to change our entire view of reality, and how scientists are trying to, you know, wrestle with these things to make them coherently fit together. Let's see. You can also think of the theory of biological evolution and how, you know, that theory has evolved, no pun intended, since its original conception in the mind of Charles Darwin. It has evolved quite a lot. Also, you know, the scientific community has had to make significant revisions to how it sees reality because of the evidence of that theory. And you know, so we do this on all different forms of human life. The more information we get, the more we need to revise information we had previously. Not necessarily changing it, although sometimes that does happen, at least in the secular world, right? But at least developing it. This is why, and I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, this is why the development of doctrine is absolutely necessary for any religious organization. I mean, it would be ludicrous to say that doctrine does not develop in the sense that you know, it would be ludicrous to say that from the very beginning of Christianity, we have the fullness of understanding of what Christian revelation means and what its importance is for our lives. You know, that would be ridiculous to say such a thing, I would argue. And thus, like, it's like we've been given all the puzzle pieces. The apostles had all the same puzzle pieces that we have today. We just have to arrange them in the correct order, is kind of an analogy that I would use. So, you know, this question of what do we do about the bodies of Jesus and Mary, this whole idea of revelation that we have, you know, Jesus's body being, Jesus with his body ascending into heaven, right? And Mary with her body being assumed into heaven. Like, where do those bodies go? if heaven is not an actual locality, and it's just a state of the soul being disembodied and being also in the beatific vision, then how does it make sense that the bodies of Jesus and Mary could be there in that state, what I'm calling heaven, right? Well, I would argue, and many other theologians and philosophers would argue, that it doesn't make sense that that the bodies of Jesus and Mary would be in that sort of a state. So therefore, you know, the next logical thing would probably be to say something like, the bodies of Jesus and Mary are locally in the new heaven and the new earth, particularly the new earth, because their bodies would need to be there in a locality, right? And so therefore, that would be the, basically the solution to what Revelation has revealed. You know, we have these two kind of puzzle pieces. How do they fit together? We have the puzzle piece of Jesus' ascension into heaven and Mary's assumption. And then we also have the puzzle piece of the new heavens and the new earth at the end of time. We have the puzzle piece of our idea about human nature and us being bodily creatures, right? So how does this all fit together? Well, it seems pretty coherent to say that the bodies of Jesus and Mary, and thus their whole persons, would be present in the new heaven and the new earth in that time. Now what's interesting about this is, from our point of view right now, the new heavens and the new earth are in the future. If we're seeing time as, you know, linear, as a timeline, right? But what's interesting is Catholics have not always seen time as linear per se. I mean, there's always been a view that time is probably a little more cyclical or circular than might at first be apparent. At least from the point of view of God, time can be considered as being a little more cyclical, meaning like circular. And this has a lot of implications upon how we view quite a bit of philosophy and theology within the Catholic Church. For example, our current understanding, as far as we know, of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass is that it is the one sacrifice of Jesus Christ on the cross in 33 AD, or, you know, whatever actual year it was, right? It is that one sacrifice that is represented through time, basically through the eternity of God. That one sacrifice is represented to us today and all throughout the ages. And that's because, in a certain sense, we view time as cyclical or circular. And in a very real sense, I think it can be said that the cross of Christ, if you picture, you know, a circle, the cross of Christ is almost like at the center point of that circle, and it can radiate out into any point along that circle. This is just kind of a way I've found is easy to visualize this whole concept. And the reason for this is because, I mean, so think about it. You have the beginning of time being the creation of the universe, right? Genesis chapter 1, the creation of the universe. That would be, you know, you can think of the beginning of the timeline if we're thinking linearly here. And the end of the timeline could be the destruction of this world, this universe, at the end of time. And we know from science, it seems pretty clear right now, at least from physics at least, that, in my understanding, that the world has a beginning and will have an end. It seems, you know, the world, the universe as we know it is not eternal, right? However, I think in God, you can kind of bring, if you're thinking about that timeline, you can bring the beginning of that timeline, Genesis 1, and the end of that timeline, which would be, you know, you could kind of say like the last chapter of Revelation, of the book of Revelation. You can kind of bring the beginning of the timeline and the end of the timeline, and you can kind of wrap them up to create a circle, right? Maybe this is just me being a doofus and thinking about this in this way, but it might be helpful for you. So you can wrap those up and turn them into a circle, is kind of how I think about it. And, you know, in God, the beginning of this universe and the end of this universe are kind of similar points. And if you think about it, you know, the original sin, it kind of broke the timeline in a certain sense. Because the original sin, it like made a rift in reality by offending the eternal God, by trying to make a rupture in eternal God, in the eternal one. And I've discussed this in past podcasts. I think it was like 3 or 4 podcasts ago, episodes ago, that I discussed this concept in particular of like what sin actually does. So it kind of like created this rift in reality, and it was only the cross of Christ that could heal that rift, because, you know, we're human beings, and we made an infinite offense against the infinite God. I mean, any offense against the infinite God is an infinite offense, because it kind of makes a rift in God in a certain sense, at least in a relational sense. And a rift in an infinite line can be considered an infinite rift, an infinite break. Once you break an infinite line, right, it's no longer an infinite line, and you need infinite power to repair said break. So, from the standpoint of humanity was the one, the party in that relationship that committed the offense, and so humanity was the only one that could provide restitution for the offense. But yet, only infinite power and infinite love could repair the damage done, and so God was the only one who could actually heal that offense, the rift that had happened. And so you need some sort of combination of God and man to actually heal sin. And this is actually an argument that St. Bonaventure makes in his Breviloquium, I think it was chapter 4, on the Incarnation. And, he, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, basically. I'm kind of riffing off of it as well. But he does make a very similar type of an argument. And I think a very salient argument, for that matter. so this rift was occurred, and you know, is still occurring, and basically, you know, is occurring throughout the entire timeline. You know, there was that little bit there where between Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 3 there was no sin, but for the most part, for this entire timeline, there has been sin, which is that rift in reality. And thus the cross of Christ, in order to repair that sin, in order to repair sin in general, the cross of Christ needs to be applied throughout the entire timeline. So, you know, you could think of it, you know, as if you're looking at it linearly, the cross of Christ then kind of reaching out to every point along the line and healing all the different rifts in it, right? All the different breaks in it. You can also think about it in a circular way, a cyclical way, where the cross of Christ is the center of the circle and it radiates out to every point along said circle to heal all those breaks, all those rifts. So, going back, why do I find this whole cyclical part of the timeline to be an interesting point in relation to the topic of Jesus and Mary's bodies and all that kind of stuff? Well, we were talking about how, you know, in a very real way, the bodies of Jesus and Mary and possibly other saints like Enoch and Elijah are in the new heavens and the new earth, in a sense, right now, although... from our vantage point, that's in the future, because that aspect of reality has not yet been created, at least as our timeline goes, right? I mean, I guess you could look at it as maybe there's two different timelines, which, you know, is not foreign to our modern way of thinking, at least since the introduction of quantum mechanics in physics. But, so you could think of it as two different timelines as well, which is another interesting point. But, like, in the eternity of God, you know, time does not exist. Time is only from the vantage point of non-eternal beings. So, you know, angels, in a certain sense, experience time, you know, because they had it a beginning, so they experience time. Although probably much differently than we do. And then, you know, human beings experience time in the sense that we do have a beginning. And so, like, this whole idea about Jesus and Mary and possibly others being in that future place of the new heavens and the new earth, it's not as difficult, you know, if you're looking at salvation history in this cyclical sort of a way. And I think it's actually quite quite a helpful way to look at it, and really quite revelatory. It's quite revelatory when we look at history in this sort of a way, when we look at particularly salvation history in this sort of a cyclical way, or we try to look at it from God's point of view. And we can see how all these various connections make sense, particularly how the cross of Christ relates to all of it, and it makes a lot of theology, it connects a lot of dots, I think, particularly with the cross of Christ and the Mass, and then also, you know, this whole issue with the new heavens and the new earth. And I also think, you know, looking at it from the standpoint of our own souls, you know, and I've talked about this, that I kind of believe in a corruptionist point of view where our soul will, of course, live on in that interim state between our bodily death and the general resurrection. But our person won't necessarily, and because we don't have our bodies, we won't necessarily have experiences per se, because we need our bodies to have experiences, I would argue. And so what we're going to experience is that once we die on this side of the veil, right, the first thing we're going to wake up actually experiencing is the general resurrection at the end of time. But in the same way, like, it's not like our soul didn't have any experiences per se. It's just that we ourselves wouldn't experience them because we are, our person, I would argue, is, like, we are bodily, corporeal creatures. And it's more of a miracle, I would argue, that our souls are being held in existence and apart from our bodies during that interim state. So, yeah. And in that way, you know, it's I think it's helpful to kind of view things in this sort of cyclical kind of a way. Like, yes, my soul would exist for those, you know, hundreds or thousands of years or however long it is that my soul would be in the interim state. But to me, it would kind of feel like the snap of a finger or the blink of an eye. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting stuff. It is. It's very interesting stuff to think about these things, I think. Maybe you find this incredibly boring, but I do find it quite interesting. So, yeah. Anyway, I think that's a good place to stop. I think I've exhausted this issue as far as I can do at this time. So we will pick up next time with a new topic. All right. God bless.